I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about Impact 100 Greater Indianapolis. Impact 100 is a women's giving circle that awards grants to not-for-profits in central Indiana. The design is to make gifts that can leverage change and create opportunity. My guests are Beth Thomas, president of Impact 100 Greater Indianapolis, Megan McGuire of Ascent 121, which is a 2016 Impact 100 grant winner, and Lizzie Conkle, an Impact 100 scholarship recipient. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, Facebook is No Limits WFYI, and Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about Impact 100 Greater Indianapolis. It's a women's giving circle, fascinating concept. We're going to talk about it and how it works. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Beth Thomas. She is the president of Impact 100 Greater Indianapolis. Megan McGuire. She is with Ascent 121. They were a 2016 Impact 100 grant winner. And Lizzie Conkle, who is an Impact 100 scholarship recipient. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. So I'm going to start with you, Beth. We ought to talk about what Impact 100 is, how it works.
It's an interesting concept. The plan is each individual person, woman, cannot give enough, or most of us, don't have the funds to be able to give enough money to any organization that can make a difference. But if 100 women get together and put their money into a pool and give that money to an organization, that's an impact. And that's the basis of the whole thing.
How long has Impact 100 been around?
We were founded in 2005. The first grant was given away in 2006.
Okay, so this is a... You're at about the 10-year mark.
Well, our 10-year was in 2015, so yeah. And we gave away our 11th grant in 2016, and so now we're building up for our 12th grant in 2017.
Okay, so and I promise to Megan and Lizzie, we are going to get to you here. But in terms of this, how do you find the 100 women? And, you know, because I'm sure that there are women listening to this right now thinking, oh, boy, that sounds like something I might want to be part of.
We find them, but they also find us. When it originally started, it was a lot of word of mouth. It was women telling their friends who were telling their friends, going to work, telling their colleagues, and it spread that way initially. But as we give grants and as we touch people in an organization, women involved with that organization start asking the question, you know, how do I get involved? And that's how I got involved. I was on the board of directors of the Indy Reads, and we received a $100,000 grant at a time in our work that it was a pretty important. It made a difference in the organization. And so sitting on the board.
$100,000 will do that.
Yes, it will. But the board is sitting there and talking about this was the turning point for us. And when we talk to a lot of the organizations that get this $100,000 grant, they bring a big idea to us. And that's the plan. Bring us a big idea and explain it to the women. But when somebody wins that, it tends to take them up to that next step, that next level. Jameson Camp said to us, what that did for us is it allowed us to breathe. We had the money to do the things we wanted to do, but at the same time, then we could start doing some planning. What could we do next?
So, Megan, what was the big idea that you brought to Impact 100?
The big idea is the Impact program. It's a little confusing because our program has the same name as the grantor. But the impact.
And sadly, on radio, we can't put asterisks or anything like
exactly.
that to designate. But so it goes.
The Impact Program is one that we offer in collaboration with Lutheran Child and Family Services. And we serve teenage girls that are coming out of sex trafficking here in the city. And Impact provides residential care. We have an 11-bed residential unit that they can live in. Most of the girls live there from 6 to 12 months and have clinical and therapeutic care, education. They attend school, activities, all manner of things that high school kids are interested in doing to pass the time while they are there. And the grant that we applied for really gave momentum to that program. It's fairly new. It's only been running now for 2 years. And the grant has allowed renovations of the facility. The renovations are probably the thing we're most excited about. Sometimes people think of girls that have come out of trafficking as criminals, mm-hmm. but in fact, they're really victims, and we don't want to put them in an environment that makes them feel like a criminal. So the renovations that were funded by Impact 100 really allowed to refurbish the facility where they live, fresh paint, fresh carpeting, some new furniture, and really give it a more homey feel for the girls that live there. And that's very important in their recovery process.
Where does the name Ascent 121 come from?
Great question. We are a faith-based agency, and we are named after Psalm 121.
Okay. And could you recite Psalm 121, or am I, or is this like a pop quiz?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Psalm 121 says, I look up to the mountains. Does my strength come from the mountains? No, my strength comes from God, who made heaven and earth and the mountains. And we chose that name for the agency because we believe that God has far more influence in the recovery of these girls than we do, and it's that important to us that we name the agency after it.
And how did you go about, because it I'm always interested in these philanthropic enterprises.
Sure.
There are multiple vantage points from which to view the process. How did you go about first identifying Impact 100 as a potential funder or donor, and then what was the process like of applying?
Well, our program runs with a partner, Lutheran Child and Family Services. They actually own the residential unit where the girls live. Mm-hmm. My team provides a lot of the clinical care for the girls, and they, LCFS, has applied for this grant repeatedly, 7 or 8 times over the years for a variety of different programs, and they've been finalists several times. But when we collaborated for the Impact Program, we actually applied last year together for the Impact Program. So that's how the grant got on our radar.
Okay, so there was that element of collaboration. And Lizzie, you are a scholarship winner, right?
Yes, I was one of the scholarship recipients in the last grant-making cycle.
Okay.
I was one of 10 women that benefited from that amazing program.
And how did you go about applying? What did you say?
So I let them know about what I had seen in my work at Heron High School. I previously was in the development office at Heron High School, and they were a grant recipient in 2008, so one of the first grants and early on in the history of the school. So I had seen firsthand the impact mm-hmm. an Impact 100 grant can have on an organization. So I knew from that I wanted to get involved in this important work.
And how are you going to use the scholarship?
So actually, our scholarships are in the form of payment for our membership fees. Mm-hmm. So we are able to participate in the Impact process at no cost to us. So other Impact women donate and contribute through their own generosity to allow young women to participate in the grant-making process.
So I'm assuming, Beth, that's about grooming the next generation of leadership, basically.
It is. It's that we basically have three main things that Impact 100 strives to do. The one is, of course, to give, and that is the individual women giving, but then once the money is collectively giving. The other one is mentoring, and that includes someone like me coming on and being mentored by the women who have already gone through the process, and then new people coming in, and especially our Young Philanthropists Scholarship Program that allows us to get young women who want to make a difference in their community, but the membership fees are high. And so that allows them to do that.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Impact 100 Greater Indianapolis. It's a women's giving circle that attempts to link arms and leverage change through those linked arms. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So, Beth, how many requests for grant support do you get?
We start our process out with what's called an LOI, mm-hmm. which is a letter of inquiry. Some call it a letter of intent. But what that is it says, this is what I would do if I got your $100,000 at a high level. And some years we'll get as many as 150 of those, and other years we'll get as few as 60. One of the things that I like to see is the fact that as we're getting fewer each year, they're more focused. They understand that what we're looking for, as I said earlier, is that big idea, that thing that the Women of Impact 100 can fund and truly make a difference in our community.
Are there criteria that you use? I mean,
we have what we call five focus areas, arts and culture, the environment, education, family, and health and wellness. So just about any nonprofit will fit into one of those categories, but we allow them to self-select when they give us their LOI, their letter of intent. So if, for example, an education nonprofit could actually apply in the environment category because what they're doing is going to make a difference, say, in a recreational facility, or which is one of the things that falls within the environment category.
And in terms of that, I'm assuming that there are there geographic restrictions, too, in that it's got to be located, you know, like the...
Yeah, our we will fund nonprofit ideas that are in Marion County and the eight donut counties. Mm-hmm. So that's Johnson, Hancock, Hendricks. I've got a list somewhere. But it's the ones, if you look at a map, They're around the donut counties, yes. And those are we will fund projects that the money will be used within those areas. Doesn't mean the organization has to be totally in those areas, but the money has to go into those areas.
And in terms of, are there certain areas that you just won't look at? I'm trying to think of an example that might be like if the National Rifle Association's 501c3 submitted an application. Is that something you would take a look at? Or?
We look at all of the applications. We've had some interesting ones over the years because there are people who see these people are going to give away $100,000. So we've had applications from somebody who says, I'm going to start a nonprofit if I get your money.
Oh,
So that's a good promise.
Yeah.
But no, that's... if I got an application from anyone, it would go to the self-selected committee that they chose, and the women in that committee would review it. And we have some very smart women. And this process, I tell everybody, trust the process because the process works. And it's proven year after year, there'll be an idea that might come and. There might be a reason why somebody feels it's not valid, but somebody else thinks it is. They do the research, they come back. And a really good example of that is Rocksteady Boxing almost didn't make it out of the letter of intent phase, and it has been one of our most nationally recognized recipients.
Lizzie, what have you learned out of being part of this process from the other side?
So the two main aims of the scholarship program are to allow young philanthropists to learn more about collective giving as a concept, but also to introduce them to the organizations that are doing important work in our community. So I was able to go on site visits with my fellow committee members to see firsthand what our finalists were working on and the problems that they were trying to solve. I also was able to meet what I call new friends and new mentors. So I had new friends in my committee members and also women in the community that are very influential that I could look up to as philanthropists.
What committee do you serve on?
So I was on the family committee this last year, and we actually put forth the Ascent 121 and Lutheran and Children Family Services finalists as our finalists for this year. So I had one winner in 1 year.
okay.
And this next year, I'm going to be a co-chair on the Arts and Culture Committee.
And how long do you serve typically as a scholarship recipient?
It's one grant cycle. So this next year, I've joined as a shared member. So I will share my vote with three other women this next year.
Okay. And is it still on a scholarship basis, or in that second time you got to put your own money in?
Nope. I had such a great experience in Impact 100 that I made the decision to join again this year on my own.
Well, we are talking about Impact 100, a women's giving circle here in Indianapolis. My guests are Beth Thomas. She's the president of Impact 100 Greater Indianapolis. Megan McGuire, who is with Ascent 121, which was a 2016 grant recipient. And Lizzie Conkle, who is a scholarship recipient. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Impact 100. It's a women's giving circle that attempts to leverage through shared endeavors, gifts that make an impact on the community. My guests are Beth Thomas. She is the president of Impact 100 of Greater Indianapolis. Megan McGuire of Ascent 121. They were 2016 Impact 100 grant winner. And Lizzie Conkle, who is an Impact 100 scholarship recipient and is also now part of Impact 100 as a committee member. So since the goal of these things is to be transformative in nature, these grants, I'm going to start with you on this one, Megan. How did receiving this grant transform your initiative, your organization, what you were trying to do?
The grant has really been able to give momentum to a program that is just really getting started. Girls that are coming out of sex trafficking are becoming identified much more quickly, and so the pace at which they're becoming referred to us is picking up every month as the program goes on. So our agency is needing to grow and be able to serve more and more girls. And so the grant allowed four different things to happen. The renovation that I discussed a few minutes ago, it also is providing for a large event in the community in the spring. And that will go a long way towards broadening the understanding of the community that sex trafficking really does happen here. It's a commonly misunderstood issue, so having a platform and the voice of Impact 100 along with us will draw in a lot of community members who maybe don't even realize this is happening here, and help parents to keep their kids safer, help kids to make wise decisions, and provide some support to social service workers and law enforcement that are actually working with the girls that are coming out of this. So renovations was part one. The event is part two. It has allowed us to expand our staff. We've hired four part-time clinicians, which has allowed us to serve more girls. And then it has also provided some training for those the new clinicians. Working with complex trauma is a very specialized service, and so having really expert skill sets for our clinicians is important. And so the grant money that came from Impact 100 is touching all of those things. So it has the immediate short-term influence over the girls living in the unit today, and then those that come after them. But then it also teaches our staff and trains clinicians who will work well on into the future and has the potential to reach the community as well through the event in the spring.
Lizzie, as you say, the Ascent 121 grant proposal or request came through your committee first. How many different requests or proposals came through your committee?
I was on the family committee, and we actually had a large number of requests come through our committee. I think we started with 14 or 15, if that's correct, Beth.
Mm-hmm.
And which is high, even for in relation to the other committees. And then we go through the whittling down process where we ask a smaller number to submit full grants. And then we did site visits at three locations. And the Ascent 121 story And the site at Lutheran Child and Family Services was just so impactful. It's a cause that we don't think about here in Central Indiana, mm-hmm. but something that really is pervasive in our community. So I think that story just sat well with our committee members, and we knew Megan would do a great job presenting at our final dinner.
What kind of, in terms of qualities, because it sounds to me like there's several stages to this, and really to get to that final category where you're one of the three, say, that gets a site visit. Now, is that three per committee, or is that three per, okay, but three per committee means?
It's 2 to 3 per committee.
Okay, so you got to have a really good idea to have made it that far.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Our process is okay. It winnows down from the LOIs, the letters of inquiry intent, that go to the committees. The committees choose anywhere from 5 to 8 that they then say, I'd like to see a full grant application. And then once they get the full grant application, they cut that down, they winnow that down to the 2 or 3 they want to see at a site visit. And then they have to get it down to 1 that they take to the final dinner. And at the final dinner, as Lizzie alluded to, each of the 5 finalists, 1 from each of the committees, arts and culture, education, environment, family, health and wellness, they have 7 minutes to tell their story to the full membership. And they are not allowed to use PowerPoint. They're not allowed to hand out freebies to garner anybody's favor. They just tell their story. And then the women vote, and that night we give it away. Some people call it a Shark Tank experience. They're up there. They have 7 minutes to talk. We have a timekeeper. We're not kidding around.
Nope.
it's done.
Difference being, normally the sharks don't feed you first.
That's correct.
But, yeah.
We feed them during the vote counting. Okay. So they got the nervous stuff over.
So, Megan, walk me through the 7 minutes. Were you the one who made the presentation?
I was the one who made the presentation.
Okay.
And it is a high-pressure 7 minutes, I'll tell you that.
Is it like a Supreme Court thing where you do an opening remark and then suddenly people start peppering you with questions, or is it just you talk for 7 minutes?
I talk for 7 minutes, as did the other finalists. And it's a wonderful opportunity to have the undivided attention of a ballroom full of people that may know a good deal about us or may not. So in my 7 minutes, my job is to introduce the issue and really help them to understand what it looks like to be a trafficked teenage girl in Indiana and remind them how they might have felt as a 13 or 14-year-old girl and what that would look like going through this type of experience and the recovery that's necessary for someone who has. And so to paint that picture in the voice of a couple of the girls, to share a few stories of girls that we've served, and then to outline the program itself that the two partner agencies run together, and then very quickly to outline how this money will be used in a meaningful short-term and long-term fashion, and get all that done in 7 minutes.
Sounds like a pressurized environment. Is the voting then done, by show of hands,
no.
Or is it secret ballot?
We have secret ballot,
okay.
And we actually have some women who can't attend the meeting that are given a write-up of all of the applicants, and then they actually will. We've got absentee votes that aren't opened until after the presentations are made. We have uninterested, non-involved people who go into a back room and count the votes, and they come out and make the announcement. The interesting thing, as I said earlier, I always tell everybody, trust the process, trust the process. I do believe that always the best one comes to the top and wins, and for any organization that doesn't win, they can apply next year, and they should have learned something through the process. One of the things that everyone tells us, winners, non-winners, anyone who goes through the process at all, they tell us that they learn something about their project by the questions that women ask. They learn more about philanthropy in our community. But one of the other things is they do, as Megan said, they get a ballroom full of people who are listening. And they will find that they will get donors or people who are volunteers. We have several of our women who now serve on boards of the organizations that we've granted to.
We hear feedback from the organizations that other grants were easier for them once they said they'd been through the Impact 100 process and made it as a finalist. Other grantors know that our process is very rigorous.
If you are just joining us and would like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener has done and find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. This listener says, where did Impact 100 get the idea of pooling donations? Is the idea a relatively new concept in philanthropy, or is there a history of this working elsewhere? Beth, I'll throw that to you.
Well, I'm sure this is something that's been done before, but a woman that I met several years ago at a collective women's giving network conference, her name is Colleen Willoughby, and she found that as a philanthropist in her Washington State community, that other women didn't really understand that anyone can be a philanthropist. They saw it as a hoity-toity term, and, you know, it was only for rich people. And so she got some of her friends, some of her people from her church, people that she had known that were not necessarily wealthy people, and taught them how they could put their money together and they could work with her to choose who she gave her next grant to. And the women were enthused. There was talk of it. There was an article in People magazine. A woman in Cincinnati saw the article, and she started the first Impact 100. And we were the fourth Impact 100. There's now 46. There's one. There's two in Australia, and I forget. I think it's someplace in South America. I actually personally have spoken to someone in Brazil who wants to know more about starting one, but it's in. It's grown, but the idea is basic, simple. Let's teach other people about philanthropy.
How did you settle on the idea of 100? I mean, as opposed to Impact 50 or Impact 200 or...
Well, the woman in Cincinnati, and I apologize because she's a lovely lady and I'm horrible at names. I can't think of her name right now. But they decided on 100 because they thought if everybody gives 1,000, that gives us 100,000. That's a big round number. It's an exciting figure that people in the community will want to know where is 100,000 coming from. And they thought it was a doable. They thought with the people that were together, they could each bring enough people in to get 100. And so that is part of the name of Impact 100, and so that's what we strive for. We would love to be able to get to a point where we'd keep the name, but give away, say, 5 grants. There's an Impact 100 in Pensacola, Florida that gives away 10 $100,000 grants year.
And they stuck with the Impact 100 as opposed to calling it Impact 1000 then or something like that.
You'd have to change the name every year.
Yeah.
I don't want to print that much letterhead.
Letterhead is also sort of going the way of the dodo bird
I know,
and all of
still.
That, too. But I guess where I'm going is, are there plans to try to grow this beyond
yes.
where? Okay,
yes.
Where do you want to take it?
Like I said, if I had my way, we would hit 200 members this year so we could give away two $100,000 grants and then continue to grow.
Where are you right now?
Right now we are, last year we gave away $155,000.
Okay.
This year we're on track to probably be at least there.
Okay.
The lovely thing about Impact 100 is there's really only two rules.
Yeah.
Three, maybe. You have to be a woman over 21, and you have to give $1,000 or join with two or three other women and give $1,000. You pull your membership into what we call a shared membership, which is what Lizzie's doing this year. She's a shared member. Those are the rules.
Okay.
And we give – here's the thing. We give – we get – the 100,000 or however much every person gives 1,000, every group of women gives 1,000, and we give 100% of that away every year.
So it's entirely a pass through.
It is entirely a pass through.
So
budgeting is very, you know,
yeah,
accounting is very easy.
Yeah, it's zero sum. You probably, but in terms of the way this works, do people, are there like term limits, or do have you got? women who started in 2005 who are still and haven't missed a year.
That is correct. We have under 20, but right at, I think, 18, 19 women who have been members ever since the very beginning. We have some women who were a member for 1 year and then weren't the next year because they didn't quite get the concept, I'm going to do this every year. And then, oh, wait, I forgot, or, you know, yeah. I'm sorry. And they've been members ever since. So we have another large group that's everything but one. And then as the nicest thing is at first there was a lot of 1 year members. More and more, our renewing rate is improving.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Susanna, and if you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. I'm going to throw this one first to Beth, but I'd like to hear everybody's thoughts. Why do you think it is important to be a women-only organization? And I guess if I might take the liberty, Susanna, a question before that one would be, do you think it is important, and then the why? I'll start with Beth.
Well, the idea, again, goes back to the original founders of the women's giving. And at that time, in a lot of cities, there were men's organizations that made large grants. Or people tended to feel that giving was always a man's decision. And the decision was, let's show women that it is a women's thing. And it doesn't, you don't have to necessarily be the main breadwinner or be, you know, the person whose name is on a building someplace to be a philanthropist. And so it was the concept at first was empowering women and mentoring women. And, you know, I said earlier we have basically three main things, and one of them is the giving and mentoring. But the third one is the learning, and that's what's so important. We learn so much about the organizations and so much about the need in our community.
Lizzie, do you think it's important that it's women only?
I do. There's a saying that we have an impact that it's meant to include women in the philanthropy process, not exclude men. So it's to bring women into that process and making those decisions on how a household makes their charitable contributions every year. I also thought, especially on the family committee, it was important to have a women's perspective when we're looking at these organizations that uniquely impact women and children with their program. I thought that was just such a cool connection.
How about you from the other side of the equation, Megan? Do you think it's important to have an organization like this that is driven exclusively by women?
I do. I think the power of women giving as one really matters, and educating and mentoring up-and-coming philanthropists. There are not a lot of opportunities, at least that I'm aware of, especially for younger people to grow up and become lifetime philanthropists. And it really goes a long way towards educating and giving opportunities and removing obstacles so that someone can become a scholarship member to give it a try and get an understanding of what this does. And most of the scholarship members turn around and become members themselves in subsequent years. And it really does provide a roadmap for growing into a commitment to philanthropy.
This question, Susanna, I'm going to take liberty of following up on yours. Is one of the benefits, at least I think I would say, and I say this as obviously a male myself, are there different focuses too? I mean, people who come to things with different sets of experiences and different often see different things, see different needs. Is there value in that? Lizzie, you made the mistake of making eye contact, so I'm going to go to you first.
One of my favorite parts about the committee process is that it is collaborative in nature. So it's a group of women coming together with all of their different backgrounds, education, and experiences to look at the same grant application. So I'm going to look at an application very differently from an accountant who understands the budget and backside of their process. So I thought that was what struck me the most, was the ability to bring all these women from different backgrounds together to come to one collaborative decision.
Yeah, I'd like to hear your thoughts on the other side too. We are talking about Impact 100. My guests are Beth Thomas. She is the president of the organization. Lizzie Conkle, who's on the board and is a scholarship recipient, and Megan McGuire, who is with a grant recipient, Ascent 121. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Impact 100, which is a women's giving circle here in Indianapolis. My guests are Beth Thomas. She is the president of Impact 100 Greater Indianapolis, Megan McGuire, who is with Ascent 121. They were a 2016 Impact 100 grant winner. And Lizzie Conkle, who is an Impact 100 scholarship recipient and is part of Impact 100, serves on one of the committees. Talked about that, the value also in having an organization that is driven by women, whether that creates a different set of priorities and or opportunities for the philanthropy. Beth, your thoughts.
That's an interesting question, but having served on several committees and chairing several of them, the one thing I think I notice is there's always some women who aren't comfortable taking the stage, let's say, if it's in a co-ed situation. And yet when they start talking, their ideas, their thoughts are what we all needed to hear. And I really liked Lizzie talking about the various people who come to the tables in the committees. I can remember sitting on my first committee and, you know, one of the things we were discussing sounded like such a wonderful idea to me. And one of the other women was able to say, look, there's already this organization. Mm-hmm. They're already doing it. They're doing it very well. To fund somebody to come up is just going to impact them. Mm-hmm. And it was a viewpoint that I wouldn't have considered.
Mm-hmm. Megan, I'm going to let you have the last word on that question.
The beauty of it is that it does bring together so many viewpoints mm-hmm. at the table. As the committee members are considering the different grants, they all have a different perspective from which they're evaluating things. And I think that that's a very valuable part of the process because, as Lizzie was saying, there are business professionals and philanthropists from all different walks of life that bring interesting backgrounds and awareness of other nonprofits in the city that are doing important work and different awareness of issues that are affecting the community. And it really helps to zero in on one that will make a meaningful difference to have all those points of view on one committee.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about Impact 100. It is a women's giving circle that hands out in excess of $100,000 worth of grants and financial support to worthy nonprofits here in the central Indiana area. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Barbara has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Barbara, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, John, and hello to all your guests. I have met them all personally. I am one of those 20 women who joined and consistently joined from back in the day. And my comment is I think Impact has changed not just individuals, not just nonprofits, but really boosted the generosity of a lot of grant-making organizations in Indianapolis, and I witnessed that the first year. We had a few naysayers who said, really, are there that many nonprofits that really have that large a scope of projects to need a $100,000 grant? We went ahead and said, yeah, we think so. And at our first informational session, it was down at 38th and Meridian in a large room. We weren't sure how many people would show up. We wound up having to have a second information session because our first one was standing room only. And I think we had representatives from over 160 nonprofits show up. And I just opened it up to further comment.
Thanks very much for the call, Barbara, and for sharing the story. And thank you, obviously, for your contributions to the community.
Thank you.
Certainly. So how has this, you know, Barbara alludes to the fact that it opened up and sort of ramped up the scales for philanthropy. One, do we think that's a valid thesis? And two, how did it do that? I'll tell you what, I'm going to go with Lizzie. I think she was nodding her head a second before you were back.
So I have seen the impact of Impact 100 is what we call ripples. So you never know what one contribution to the community is going to make out in the end. I actually work professionally with an organization called 100 Voices of Hope, which is a giving circle that supports breast cancer research at the IU Simon Cancer Center. That organization was inspired by Impact 100. So Impact 100 has led to a series of giving circles around the city that have either their own focus areas in what they support, or their own focus areas and people that they hope to bring together to give collectively. So I have seen that immense impact come out of this program that was started.
Beth, I want to give you a chance to speak to this, too.
Yeah, one of the things, I love Lizzie, and she mentioned our ripple, because that's one of our logos, is a drop of water into water and watching the ripple effect, because that's what we're most proud of. But a lot, our founder, Donna Oaklack, talks a lot about raising the tide of philanthropy in Indianapolis, that as you add to the pool, the tide raises, the water raises. And we have seen the addition of several giving circles that take the idea. And we've also seen that there is, as more people see that you can give and make an impact and see that impact, we see there are more people doing and giving.
And the question I'm going to ask is an old one, but sadly still a pertinent one. One of the subtexts to the conversation, some of the answers here is I've heard repeatedly that, you know, many women think if you don't have your name on a building or da-da-da, and that the original purpose of this was to be somewhat empowering. Has it changed sort of the paths to leadership for women in this community? Because that, if it has, that would strike me as something that's almost as impactful as, no offense, Megan, any gift that they might have made to a not-for-profit or anything. If it has been empowering at that level and convinced more and more women that they do belong at the table where the decisions are made. Beth, I'm going to let you speak to that first.
I don't know if we can make that claim. Mm-hmm. There are people that have maybe more history with the philanthropic community in Indianapolis. I've always been on the doer end. Mm-hmm. And, started out as a tutor. Well, actually started out as a volunteer at the Children's Museum, moved into tutoring adults. Onto the board for Indy Reads. You know, I've always been the hands-on person, so this leadership thing is kind of new for me, and I'm learning what some of the things. I like to think that people like Lizzie, she came to us with a lot of tools and a lot of skills, but that through the mentoring of the people that she met on her committee, that she takes that now with her new position and is able to use the things that she's learned. So, and as I said, we've got women who have joined the boards of other nonprofits. We've had women who have actually quit giving to Impact 100 because they found an organization through this process that they believed in enough that they wanted to give directly. We're sorry to see them go, but they continue to have an impact. And I've been asked before about the other women's giving circles in Indianapolis and other organizations, and, you know, do we compete? And I don't consider us competitors, because as long as the goals of giving, learning, and mentoring are being met, whether they're being met through us or being met through an organization, that's our goal. Those are our goals. Our goals are being met.
Lizzie, do you think it's transformed sort of the leadership education or culture for women?
I can say state. Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Okay. Particularly for me.
I'm so happy to hear that.
Okay. Elaborate, please.
The women that I met through Impact have proven to be amazing mentors to me. not only in that they have provided advice in my professional career, but also taught me that I can start being a philanthropist at a young age. As Beth talked about, philanthropist is kind of a daunting title to aspire to. But I learned through Impact that it really is just someone who asks, how can I help? How can I be involved in my community and use my talent, use my time to make a difference?
And go ahead, Beth.
I was just going to say, and that's important. A donor writes checks.
Yeah.
A donor says, oh, you know, here's a nice organization. I believe in what they're doing. Here's a check. But a philanthropist determines whether or not the goals of that organization are in line with their goals. And they do a little bit of research and they do a little bit of thinking about who am I going to support with my dollars? And that's the only difference.
So I want to ask out of this process, because you've all at, it sounds like all of you started on the outside of it as someone who was asking for help. And at least two of you. Megan, are you going to complete the cycle here? Or are you going to be
We already got Megan.
Okay, so Megan.
Very early.
Okay, so Megan is part of the Impact 100.
Yes. She drank the Kool-Aid.
Okay, well, it sounds like it's good Kool-Aid.
It is. And I got plenty of it.
Yeah, so I want to ask what the most valuable lesson from each side of the experience has been for you. And I'm curious about that because I've been on both sides where, you know, you sort of are the donor or the person who enables the work to be done and then the person who is seeking help to do the work. But I'm going to start with Megan on that.
I think from the applicant side, it's incredibly encouraging to see that there are so many women who care about pressing issues in the community and that they are willing to invest the time and the resources to make change in the community. And as Beth has said several times, these ladies do a lot of research into the process. They do a lot of homework about the applicants. They do homework about the issues. And so going through the process and realizing that there are quite a number of those people that really care about this, and then winning the grant and realizing that's really just the beginning of the relationship with Impact 100. I apply for grants regularly and lots of times. You go through the process and you win and then it's over and you move on to the next thing to apply for. But with Impact 100, it's the beginning of a relationship. And so these women that care about this are now wanting to volunteer with us and consider serving on the board with us. And even more importantly, it's 180 voices in the community talking about this issue and connecting us to other groups. We do awareness presentations with churches and schools and civic organizations and businesses. We do lunch and learns, all kinds of things to raise awareness that this is such a pervasive issue in our state. And those people are fantastic voices for us. And so seeing that from both sides is really inspiring.
Okay. Lizzie.
I think the most important lesson I learned that I could take to the side of a nonprofit is how to tell your story. Mm-hmm. When you're reviewing the grants, you're looking through a lot of paperwork. You're reading a lot of information. And when you craft that application, you just want to make sure that you're able to tell your story in an impactful way.
What have you learned, though, as being on the other side, the person who's being asked for help?
I would say that I've just learned the important needs that our community has and the important work that we need to do.
What was the one that was hardest for you to, you know, obviously there were three worthy ideas that made it to that. What was the one that was sort of the hardest debate for you? If you don't want to out the organization, at least you can talk in the general terms of what it was attempting to do.
We had three site visits at the end, and the last two for me were the Ascent 121 and Lutheran Child and Family Services Project. And then a program that provides essentially transitional housing for women that are leaving the correctional system where they're able to live along with their children. And we went on a site visit to that location, and that was an entirely new experience to me and actually a new cause that I've learned about now that is something that is important to me, maintaining that mother-child relationship when women are leaving the correctional system. So that was a tough one for me when I was deciding between the two when we were putting forth our finalist.
Okay. Beth.
Well, like I said, I was on the board of directors at Indy Reads when we received the grant. And what went through my head first when we got the grant was, you know, we've been blessed. Thank you. But it went, what else was, how can I be a part? I mean, this is, if this is just a group of women pooling their money and they can do this, they can make an organization like Indy Reads take this next big step. It was, I just couldn't fathom what that would be like. And then from the other side, I can tell you that at our annual meeting, it is, after we've had the five presentations, so this has just gotten it down to the five finalists, there are, you could just see people, they can't decide who to vote for. They have one vote. And even if somebody would give more money, they still only get one vote. And they have to decide. And then there's always some hurt feelings when the winner is announced. There may have been somebody totally invested in another organization. But I always say then, you know, get us more members.
How do you resolve those hurt feelings? I mean, if you say, because it sounds like these are all causes, A, that are worthy of support, and that B, people are going to feel passionate about.
You know, you just talk about if the women know that if there's an organization that didn't win, but they believe in, as Lizzie said, she had learned about a new one, and she now supports them. That's what you do. You go out and you support them in other ways.
So we're getting close on time here, and I'm sure that there are some women who have been listening to this and think, yeah, maybe I would like to be part of that. How do they go about expressing interest and getting in? I mean, should they reach out to
the
you?
The easiest thing to do is go out to our website, which is www.impact100indy.org. So impact100indy.org. And we've put a lot of time and effort into that site to make sure that everything is there. So they should be able to go through the menus and navigate and get anything they need. If they can't, there's a place there where you can send us a question.
And I am sure the initial gift of $1,000 or whatever, or even if you pool it with several other
people. And we'll help you find people to pool if you don't
have
it.
But it's tax deductible.
It's 100%
tax deductible. You're a 501c3, yes. and it can be set up that way so that it is a tax deductible gift.
And 100% goes into the pool. We give that, so by December 31st, we have our memberships. That's how much money we have to give away. We give it away in June and we start over at zero. And so from June to December is when we refill that grant pool. So we are at the end of refilling that grant pool now.
Well, I'd like to thank the three of you for what has been a lively and informative conversation. I'd like to thank my guest, Beth Thomas, President of Impact 100 Greater Indianapolis, Megan McGuire, who is with Ascent 121, and Lizzie Conkle, who is also with Impact 100. I'd like to invite our listeners to come back on Thursday when we're going to be discussing a provocative question: are Indianapolis schools becoming resegregated? I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.